As a longtime complementary medicine practitioner, I know how important it is to ensure that the supplements I prescribe are genuine, professional grade, and effective. That's why I use Fullscript as my online dispensary, so I can send my patients as well as Intelligent Medicine listeners the exact products they need. If you're a healthcare provider, do what I did and sign up for a free Fullscript account. Just go to fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. Fullscript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. Sign up for a free Fullscript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. That's fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to discuss an upcoming documentary that I'm pretty sure you'd be interested in seeing. It has to do with the HPV vaccine, the vaccine that is purported to be the solution to our current epidemic of cervical cancer and perhaps also oral cancer. With us today, we've got a couple of experts. We've got Rob Verkerk. He's a PhD, and he is the scientific director and board member of ANH USA, and also heads up ANH International. It's the Alliance for Natural Health, of which I'm a board member. Robert is an internationally acclaimed scientist with over 25 years of experience in the field of agriculture and healthcare sustainability. He's worked in academia, industry, and the not-for-profit sector. And he is a tireless advocate for integrative health and a more natural approach to health problems. He works out of England, but ANH International is truly international. And its companion organization, which I'm part of, we have Tim Rhine, who is director of communications and also the director and producer of this new documentary. What's the documentary called?
The name of the documentary is Manufactured Crisis, HPV Hype and Horror. It's an interesting story how this became a crisis. And so we wanted to make sure that we included that in the name of the film, because really we're being led to believe that this massive crisis is emerged and it's plaguing our population. It turns out that that's pretty much a myth, but I won't get too far ahead, but the name is very intentional in that regard.
Okay, and so it is this accessible? Is it out already, or is it about to be released?
It is accessible. If you go to anh-usa.org, we do have it as a limited release to people who have registered for our organization. So right now it's for members only. We're going to be opening up to the public at large. We're also getting ready to release our UK our European version, which will be available on our international website within the next couple of weeks. So we're launching it in stages because there are, you know, obviously there's some difference between the actions that an American audience would take versus the actions the European audience would take. So we've created two different versions of the film, and they will be released. Both will be released by the end of April.
So tell us a little bit about the process that you underwent to do that. You went around and interviewed experts. I know I was interviewed for it, but you went hither and thither, and you know, you went to Denmark, you went to Spain, you went to various countries across the world, and you interviewed both experts and patients. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the project really started out, you know, we have a fairly large membership, and we try to listen to our members to hear what they're saying, what they're concerned about. And we were getting stories about people that were, you know, getting this particular vaccine and experiencing very quickly, in some cases, experienced some very severe adverse reactions that they believed were caused by the vaccine. And so we wanted to look into this issue a little bit more thoroughly. And we were hearing these stories from all over the place. It wasn't localized to one area or one country. And so we very intentionally decided to make this an international focus. And we ended up traveling to a number of different countries to just see what patterns exist. I mean, is there some similarity between what's going on in Denmark, for instance, versus what's going on in Kansas. And it's pretty interesting the patterns that emerge. So yeah, we were fortunate enough to be able to travel all over the world and see how this this problem is occurring internationally, and trying to bring that perspective to it.
Good. So, the first question is going to come up. People listening to this are going to say, well, is this another anti-vaxxer effort, an effort to get us to eschew all vaccinations and go natural? And I'll put that question to Rob for Kerr. Are we taking the stance that all vaccines are bad?
No, I don't think we are. I think the reality is what we're trying to do is correct some of the myths that are out there. And, for example, this notion that there is a major cervical cancer epidemic, particularly in developed countries, is not right. If you look at all of the data, the problem with cervical cancer relates to developing countries. It is a major problem over there. And the reason for it is because there is no screening. And we've had pap smearing. We now have a number of genetic tests that can be done to look at cellular abnormalities. These are major developments in screening. And we have to have a much more rational approach to how we look at the notion of how we're going to manage the potential risk. If you look at, in Western countries, how cervical cancer actually maps out through different age groups, most people who die are in their mid-80s. Hmm. So it's one of these cancers, a little bit like prostate cancer, that if you don't do something about it. Now, there are obviously rare cases of very aggressive cervical cancer in some women. And one of the sad things about the machinery that's been constructed is that these isolated cases have been made, if you like, poster girls for the problem, for the vaccine mm-hmm. industry. And as a society, we're meant to blindly accept this idea that we will bypass the complex filtration systems that our bodies have, be it the lungs, the gastrointestinal tract, and put a vaccine directly into the bloodstream of young girls. And of course, we now see for genital warts this idea of the other 50% being targeted. So that the notion is that you basically vaccinate the entire population. Right. And
what's wrong with that notion? I mean, because on paper it sounds great. We now have, this is a real breakthrough. It is the first vaccine for cancer, and it portends a wonderful future where we'll be able to do more and more vaccines against perhaps esophageal cancer, colon cancer. We'll eradicate cancer. What could be better than that?
Well, yeah, it is a lovely idea, and I have absolutely no issue of people being offered it. But that the notion of people being offered a vaccine for a cancer has to come with appropriate information. Mm-hmm. The idea that the vaccine is entirely safe is incorrect. It is certainly a small number of people. One of the problems is it's very hard to predict who will react. Mm-hmm. And the more you dig into the issue, the more you realize that actually, in the licensing studies that have been carried out, there's been a fair amount of data massage. There's been a lot of disregard for adverse symptoms that have literally been pushed under the carpet. But even in the available information, we still see pretty clear evidence that HPV vaccine is the most harmful vaccine that has been unleashed on a population to date. Well, we look at European data and US data, that is clear.
Tim, you got on a plane with your camera and your recorder, and you visited some of the people who had experienced vaccine injury. So share with us, what some of your impressions were and what people will see when they look at this documentary.
Yeah, I mean, I came at this from a different perspective. Rob's got all of the scientific background in this. I come at this as a father who, in my home state of Pennsylvania, they've tried several times to pass mandates. Right. And my own daughters are in fourth and sixth grade. And so this is something that is very personal to me. And, my kids are fully vaccinated. I've never been anti-vaccination in any regard. So I came at this from that perspective. And as I traveled around,
you want to protect your kids.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I want to know what the truth is, because on the one hand, we were hearing these reports, and I wanted to go out and talk personally with some of these families that were pretty devastated. I mean, I met a mother in Maryland whose daughter died shortly after getting her third injection of Gardasil.
What did she die from? What transpired after she got the shot?
And with a lot of these cases, and Rob can speak more intelligently to this than I can, what happens is you have sort of a progression. Because Gardasil, historically, and Cervarix, there were a series of three. Now I believe, you know, the recommendation is two jabs, injections. I'm picking up the British colloquialisms there.
We call them shots. They call them jabs.
You see a progression, and these tend to fall in different categories. You know, there are certain conditions that seem to be prevalent across the spectrum. Her case is one of the more severe ones, and you know, they hired some world-class experts to come in. They actually brought a lawsuit against the vaccine, which is very difficult
to do. But these are mysterious illnesses. They're not really that easily characterized.
They all have a neurological core. Yeah. I think that's the common link.
Weakness, paralysis.
Yes, muscle pain. And of course, that is obviously, when you look at the adverse event data that is released, you know, say through the CDC, it's interesting actually. The CDC is slightly more transparent about what has been going on than for example some of the European authorities.
I just read something from France where they were saying something to the effect that we shouldn't make it optional, because if we make it optional, it's going to let people think that maybe it's not so good. It kind of gives that hidden message that, well, you know, other vaccines are required. This one's optional. Maybe it's not so good. And then we won't get what's called herd immunity. I mean, we want to eliminate, our goal is to eliminate cancer. And in particular, in this case, cervical cancer and perhaps oral cancer, which is also thought to be related to HPV. So they want the entire populace to be vaccinated. Perhaps it'll disappear, just like smallpox disappeared from the earth.
The interesting thing about HPV is that we have a tendency to demonize viruses. And I think we're at a stage in our understanding of science is that we are very much, we interact with our microbial environment all the time. And in fact, you can dig out some very, very interesting research that's suggesting that humans have co-evolved along human papilloma viruses alongside them, just as we have with bacteria. It's only 10, 15 years ago that we've really understood the significance of the human gut microbiome, and we've always been focused on the bacterial component. Increasingly, we're starting to see that there are a host of other organisms. And actually, we may actually run into problems if we start wiping out all the viruses, because many of the viruses possibly do have some benefits. So we think of, say, HPV 16 and 18 as the really nasty ones that are associated with high risk of cervical cancer. But a little bit like the AIDS debate many years ago, we also see many people who are carriers of HPV 16 and 18 who are completely free of any symptoms.
And that's the kind of the interesting thing is, you know, statistically, it's not like the AIDS virus. You know, once you get the AIDS virus, you're in serious trouble. There are many people. In fact, I think the estimate is that virtually half or more of the population of young women in the United States are carriers of HPV.
Correct.
And yet only a very, very, very tiny fraction go on to cervical abnormalities.
Correct. And of course, because the cervical abnormalities occur quite slowly, if you do have regular screening and you're starting to look for cellular abnormalities on the cervix, you can actually pick it up. Mm. And also that there's a lot of evidence to suggest
it's not a hidden cancer. It can be evaluated through pap smears and HPV
genetic testing. Absolutely. And of course, we're seeing now CO2 laser treatments that can be very, very highly targeted. So it's not as if there are not ways of dealing with it. And I think as a society, we've got to be looking at what are the overall options available. The very principle of informed consent, actually, when you look at it legally in all jurisdictions, does involve giving the patient the full range of options. And this notion that there aren't options, and, you know, young kids, and of course, because we see that the younger you vaccinate a child, you know, that the typical age was started off being sort of 12, 13, there's now some evidence to suggest if you go down to 9, you increase the immunogenicity. And of course, there is another part of the sleight of hand scientifically that's being used. It's assumed that the immunogenicity relates directly to the protection, the long-term protection against cervical cancer. And of course, when you look at someone in their 40s or 50s, we don't know.
Right. And it's early to tell. Yeah. And there are some signs that there may be waning protection. And so if you get the vaccine at 9 or 11, you know, quote, before you're sexually active, because you have to make sure that that's administered early enough, then the protection may wane.
Exactly. Ron, if there's one big goal that we hope to achieve with this is to allow the public to ask more questions and to force governments to come clean about what they know and probably more importantly what they don't know. There is a lot more uncertainty about this issue than governments like to make out. And it's this issue of scientific uncertainty that we believe, particularly for families where there is, you know, some evidence that they're more hypersensitive. It does appear as if the aluminium or aluminum adjuvant within Gardasil and Cervarix are probably a significant component.
Implicated, of course, in Alzheimer's disease causation. You
know, exactly.
Toxic effects of mercury and aluminum and so on.
And the idea that a young girl after the first jab or shot who suffers a temporally related, an adverse event that's related in time to it and just gets dismissed by our doctor, that shouldn't be happening.
Could it be that certain predictive factors might identify for us who is most likely to become adversely affected, or is that
That's of course where we should be.
Yeah.
That's where the problem, while there is a smokescreen over it, where governments are claiming that they use two words around HPV, A, that it's safe, B, that it's effective.
Right.
We argue, when you look at the science, we're not in a position to claim either.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's give one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this message with you. So here goes.
As a longtime complementary medicine practitioner, I know how important it is to ensure that the supplements I prescribe are genuine, professional grade, and effective. That's why I use FullScript as my online dispensary so I can send my patients, as well as Intelligent Medicine listeners, the exact products they need. If you're a healthcare provider, do what I did and sign up for a free FullScript account. Just go to fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. FullScript stocks the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The best part, FullScript sends out refill reminders, so it's totally effortless for your patients to stay on track with their supplement protocols. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA compliant, and they offer world-class support. Improve patient outcomes, rest easier knowing your patients are getting exactly what you prescribed them. FullScript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. Sign up for a free FullScript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. That's fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to Tim and Rob on the subject of the HPV vaccine documentary. Let's look at the effectiveness side of the equation. Is there compelling evidence that we are curbing the incidence of cervical cancer with this vaccine? And of course, now they're raising the specter of oral cancer because we know, you know, the Michael Douglas story, you know, he came out and kind of put that into the public consciousness that HPV is sexually transmitted and oral sex can transmit it to the mouth and you can develop throat cancer even as a non-smoker. It used to be that all the throat cancer that I saw, smoking was the risk factor. Now we're seeing non-smokers with pharyngeal cancer. That's a bad cancer.
Yeah, you know, I think there is possibly some emerging evidence. And of course, you also have to question where this evidence is coming from. The machinery that is looking to argue that the vaccine is effective is out there.
And there's clearly a PR campaign going because there's a lot of buzz now about oral cancer. And then usually at the end of the article, it's like easily preventable if we could get the vaccine.
But, you know, the strange thing is it is to a degree a sexually transmitted virus. And one of the concerns, again, that we have is that it's never viewed as an STD. So if you're going to look at informed consent, as a parent, I have six children, four of which are girls. And two of them, my youngest two, are at the age that they should be vaccinated. And, you know, one of them has just been through that and we decided against it. Mm-hmm. Another one, we'll have to make the decision over the next year or so. But, of course, sex education has got to be part of the equation. And, of course, that's viewed as something of a taboo. But if it is to be understood as at least being partially sexually transmitted, one of the interesting things is you can look at some of the other science that suggests that there are a significant number of children that come into this world having already taken on HPV from their mothers.
Absolutely. Vaginal birth.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not only sexually transmitted, but it may be that the burden or the viral load increases. But why shouldn't parents have the option to, you know, explain some of these risks and protected sex? It's not even abstinence, but it is protected sex is one of the options.
So you're saying actually that there's some legitimacy to, you know, in the U.S., perhaps in some segments in U.K., but to a lesser extent, there's a big conservative constituency, and they say, we don't want any part of a vaccine where we have to enter into a discussion with our 11-year-old daughter about when you have sex, this is going to protect you. Because the whole notion is that, you know, we want to have protected sex.
I get that. And one of the wonderful things that we stand for in the Alliance for Natural Health is choice. And, of course, some people may choose to do that and decide that the vaccine is absolutely the right thing. But they should embark on that journey mm-hmm. in the knowledge of the known information. Others, such as myself, would choose to take the route saying, you know, this is a virus that you can reduce your exposure to it by not having direct sexual contact when you're a very young girl.
And I can say that, you know, as we traveled around and talked to all of these families, one thing was almost universally true, and it was that none of the risks were communicated.
Right. It just floored them that it was a harmless vaccine, and they were devastated.
And after the fact, I mean, after they've started dealing with these rather serious illnesses in a lot of cases, they're not believed. You have teenage girls suddenly coming forward with all of these problems, and they're being told, in some cases, they're being sent to psychologists, they're being, you know, and everywhere they're being dismissed. So there's this frustration these families go through.
So what they're saying is diagnosis, coincidence. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the vaccine and you got sick, but, you know, kids get sick and there's no relationship. It just happened.
And it's very difficult when you talk to people in different parts of the world, and they're telling the same story over and over and over again. There are patterns that are clearly existent. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the database, the various database, and other databases that track this sort of thing.
That's the vaccine adverse events.
Recording system.
Yeah, VAERS.
VAERS. Right. And in the UK, they have their own.
We've got one operating through the European Union as well, showing similar patterns. And there's no doubt that the adverse event rates are the highest that we see with any vaccine, and this is not being communicated to the public.
Wow. Yeah, and it's, you know, with a vaccine or any drug, every drug has a risk. And most of the time, or in many cases, you know, if you looked at something like the Spanish flu, if there had been a vaccine available, chances are, you know, it could have saved a large majority of the, 50 to 100 million people that died from that.
That is called the risk-benefit equation. Right. I mean, if there's like something that's absolutely devastating, one might take on some risk. But then we have to balance that against, you know, the benefits, which may be limited.
And I think that's, you know, my takeaway from this is the real tragedy here is that in all of the cases, I mean, universally in every case where somebody was injured, there was never any question of risk. So doing a proper risk-benefit assessment was impossible because if you have to be told what the real benefits are and the real risks are and be able to evaluate that with some sort of credible data.
So you have to be empowered with the knowledge, and that's what this documentary is all about. Before we break, give us the heads up on how people can preview the documentary.
So if they will go to anh-usa.org, it's posted right there on our homepage. We will be disseminating, and it will be coming to some theaters.
I don't
want
that word disseminate when we're talking about HPV. So you'll be
distributed. Yes. We will be distributing through other channels. Okay. We're going to be doing some film festivals.
It's going to go viral.
I certainly hope so.
Okay. We're going to pause now because we divide this podcast into two parts, and in part two, we're going to take a look at some of the other issues around. A controversial vaccine, a vaccine perhaps like no others, that deserves a little more of our attention. Our guests are Rob Verkerk from the Alliance for Natural Health International, and Tim Rhyme, who is the producer, director, animator, and moving force behind this documentary. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.